Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome to Work It, How to Be a Grown-Ass Podcaster, featuring panels from WNYC's first ever Women's Podcasting Festival, designed for creative women working in audio and digital media. Over the course of 2 days in June of 2015, WNYC brought together women leading the way in creating today's most innovative and groundbreaking podcasts. In this episode, New York Public Radio President Laura Walker talks about the pioneering women of modern media and introduces the festival's keynote speaker, Roxane Gay.
Good morning and welcome everyone to the Jerome L. Green Performance Space and to the very first Women's Podcast Festival. So with us today are a few of our board members, Cynthia Vance, who is the chair of our board, and Susan Solomon, who is one of our wonderful vice chairs, and Herb Scannell. Welcome. And Herb is one of the only men here, but he comes by he's earned the right to be here because when he led Nickelodeon and all the research told him that kids preferred male characters, boys, he defied the odds and put Dora the Explorer on and made Dora a star. So before we get started, I want to thank our signature sponsor for this festival.
From MailChimp.
Mail. Pain? Chimp?
MailChimp has been terrific, and that is, the sponsor announcement for Serial. And I do very much want to thank the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and their great support. And, you know, what Molly said is true. Pat had asked me to speak on a panel a couple of years ago about women in public broadcasting, and so I said, sure, I'll come and speak, but let's see, what should we talk about? And I had just read that study by Julie, and I said to Pat, what if I ask you for a grant to change this, and you say yes? And so she did. That's the kind of woman she is. And from that grant helped us develop women's voices in the form of podcasts like Death, Sex, and Money with Anna Sale, and Note to Self, which is the new name for New Tech City, with Manoush Zomorodi. So I just want to begin by telling a little story about when I was in college, and I kind of had fallen in love with radio and with journalism. And I had my eye on a job at NPR. And part of the reason for that was that NPR really championed incredibly strong female voices. There were some pretty fierce women there: Nina Totenberg, Linda Wertheimer, Cokie Roberts, Susan Stamberg. And they collectively, those four women, are referred to as the founding mothers of NPR. And, you know, Susan, as most of you know, was the first woman to anchor a nightly news program. Linda anchored All Things Considered for 13 years. Cokie covered Congress, and we still turn to her every week for her insights. And Nina, of course, has explained countless Supreme Court cases over the years. So for me, these women served as an inspiration. They set the bar high, just as they led the way in public radio. We, I think, have an obligation to continue their legacy of strong female voices in podcasting. And you, here in this room, are the pioneering women of podcasting. You are the Ninas, the Lindas, the Susans, and the Cokies of podcasting. And I think people will look back and see that you are inspiring generations of women to speak up and to be heard. So thank you, all of you, for leading the way. It's so important at this moment. It's so fun to come together right now so we can learn together, create an environment. So I'm really excited to hear the ideas that you guys are going to be pitching and working on together, and doing it in a way that is both supportive and also incredibly constructive. And I think we're all going to work it, right? So in addition to the women from WNYC, just raise your hand if you're a woman podcaster from WNYC or behind the scenes, yay. We have with us women from WBEZ, WGBH, KPCC, KUOW, WLRN, NPR, Gimlet, Midroll, BuzzFeed, Slate, The New Yorker, and Radiotopia. And we have a kitchen sister here, too. Yay. Let's Nikki is here, and you'll be hearing from Nikki in a little bit. So here today are women who stand in front of the mic and behind it, women from long-established media outlets, from startups, independents, and aspiring podcasters. We know in our hearts that the conversation, the content, and what the audience gets from it will be richer with more women's voices in the mix. So I just, we decided to do this, I thought, well, let's look at the statistics now. Back, Molly shared the statistics that were gathered in and published in 2013 about women's voices. So first what I asked for was the, you know, are women listening as much? And what's interesting, actually, that in 2013, 62% of the audience was male, 38% was female of the audience, and now the audience is almost half and half. So that's, you know, so women are listening and also demanding, I think, more women's voices. So we have made some good progress in terms of the growth of women's voices and women hosts in podcasts. So today, 22% of podcasts are hosted by women. And that is actually, you compare that to about the 11% from 2013. So that's a real, that's 100% growth, and that's great. And 9% are co-hosted. And I think we can keep this going, and that is incredibly strong growth. So I want to challenge us to get to 50-50 in 3 years. I think we can do it, and I think you can do it. And I think if we do this, then we will make podcasting the very first form to eradicate the gender gap on the talent side. You know, there really is no other medium that it is truly 50-50. So we are starting right here, right now, and we're going to check our progress every year from now until 3 years, 50-50. And you are the founding mothers of podcasting. So be proud and work it. And to get our festival started, it is my pleasure to welcome this morning's keynote speaker to our stage, Roxane Gay. Roxane is a writer. So she obviously needs very little introduction because you know and love her. She's a writer, professor, editor, blogger, and cultural commentator. Her book, Bad Feminist, tells her story of and journey of how she has owned her strong female voice while maintaining humor and authenticity. She's an example and an inspiration to us all. And if you read her book, you know she's also one hell of a Scrabble player. Please welcome Roxane Gay.
I don't have a podcast. I really want one. Every once in a while I'm on Twitter and I just say I'd like a podcast. Anyway, it's a pleasure to be here talking to all of you even though I don't have a podcast. But I also love that the seats have names on them so you can shame all the people who are late. That's so awkward. I'm just to be like, damn it, it's early. So I just thought I would, I don't know, talk to you a little bit about my journey. That's what they told me, and I was like, I don't know. I'm a kid from Nebraska. But I wrote a book, and then that book did all right, I guess. Got me some shoes. So I will admit, and I am not proud of this, that I almost gave up, not on writing, but on the idea that I would find an audience that might take an interest in my books, my writing, my voice. I'm a writer and a cultural critic with a whole lot of opinions. I'm a Libra, so I'm always considering more than one way of thinking about a given issue. I'm in academia, but I love pop culture. As an aside, have you guys seen Unreal? Jesus Christ. You're listening to too much radio. It's on Lifetime, and it's a show that's like a behind-the-scenes Bachelor, and it sort of shows like how reality TV is made. I write? Anyway, Shiri Appleby's in it, and she's really good. Check it out, Unreal, Lifetime. Anyway, I just had to plug it. I'm not even involved with the show. But I always wondered who the hell would be interested in this hodgepodge of things I'm interested in. Also, The Rock, which he's doing really well, and he has a TV show coming out. See, this is why I want a podcast, so I can just talk about it. But he's so meaty. Like, he's just like beef right now, and it's just, oh, I like my beef rare, which is to say naked. And his thighs and his neck head. I call it a neck head because there's no distinguishing feature between the two of them. Also, like my husband Channing, I kept my name, but they're both doing so well right now, and I just have fantasies about the two of them and me. Anyway, when I doubted myself, my best friend talked me off the ledge time and again, sometimes gently, sometimes fiercely. She believed in my voice when I nearly lost my faith. She had a gut feeling that eventually my books would find the right home. These days, she's unbearable because she enjoys saying I was right all along. Sometimes she'll just send me a text. I was right. She's really smug about it, and I have to allow her this because, well, yes, she was right all along. I will also admit I was intimidated, which I think most women are when it comes to this radical idea that our voices matter and deserve to be heard. I had no idea what to expect when it came to working with bigger publishers, though I heard the horror stories, so I suppose I expected very little. No money for publicity, editors who don't edit, good books languishing without publisher support that they so very much need and deserve. I'm also a writer of color, and I was told that my prospects as one were especially grim because publishers just don't know how to market us, and readers don't want to hear our stories. I still play devil's advocate with myself. There are so many books and talented writers out there. Nothing humbles you and clarifies your place in the world like refreshing your Amazon sales rank. This is admittedly a sad, sad thing to do, but I'm not averse to suffering. Some days there are literally 300,000 or 10,000 books selling better than mine. I stare at these numbers and I whisper, I am not a special snowflake. There is also the reality of this world that we live in. It is filled with people who love books, but there is always a bottom line. You are only as good as your last book. You vault over one hurdle and 10 more appear. Are the reviews going to be good? Are there going to be reviews at all? Am I going to sell enough copies in the right places to the right people? Am I going to make the publisher's investment worthwhile? Anything could go wrong. I am constantly reminding myself that this past 18 months could become a painfully glimmering memory of how good my career once was. And it's not only about me. I don't want to walk through the halls of one of the largest book publishers in the world and see no people of color in editorial positions. I don't want to look at the bestseller lists week after week, devoid of the excellent books being written by writers of color. I don't want publishing to perpetuate this atmosphere where writers of color and women writers worry that even if they get a shot, that shot won't be enough. In 5 years, I don't want to have the same damn conversations that we continue to have about diversity in the media. I will somehow make sure more people of color and more women get the chance to be as lucky as I've been. I'm going to keep writing, and more importantly, I'm going to keep using my voice. I'm going to keep fighting. I've had a taste now of what being heard should be like for more of us, and so I'm reluctant to stop. I've also learned this. Giving up does not accomplish anything. Working harder, being relentless, putting my work back out there does accomplish something. People often ask me for advice, and I tell them you have to be persistent, you have to be relentless, you have to be resilient while also accepting that you are human and susceptible to weakness. You have to trust and have faith in what you have to say. That voice that you hear telling you that your voice is unnecessary and unworthy is fueled by fear because it is fucking scary to put your work out into the world, and then, even worse, have people respond. Allow yourself to feel that fear and then dig deep into your stronger self and keep trying and keep reaching for what you want. You have to be ambitious. You cannot hide from your ambition. Don't keep it secret. Own that shit. And be responsible for how you use your voice. You will never, as a woman, only answer to yourself. These days, I'm thinking more and more about how I can best live up to the responsibility of using my voice. In truth, I did not expect Bad Feminist to be the book that changed everything. I'm relatively new to writing nonfiction. I've only been doing it seriously for about 5 years. This was my first essay collection, and somehow it found its way into the world. It's the kind of thing I didn't dare hope for. So many people, mostly women, but not an insignificant number of men, have written me beautiful letters thanking me. They have thanked me for my writing, for this book, for helping them find their voice, for helping them feel a little less alone. They have told me their stories. They have trusted me. These are the things that break me down in the best possible ways. They make me feel like I am indeed on the right path. I am humbled. I keep thinking I am not worthy, but I'm trying to believe I'm worthy nonetheless. At a reading during the Q&A, an older woman recounted the story of how she once couldn't get a credit card because she didn't have a husband. I think the year was 1969. I listened to her story and I kept thinking, may I be worthy of the work this woman has done to make my life possible. I recognize that any woman who reads, who writes, who votes, who has a banking account or credit card, who owns a home in her own name, who owns a car in her own name, who signs any business document in her own name, and the list goes on, whether she is a feminist or not, is standing on the shoulders of a great many feminists. When I use my voice, I am standing on those same shoulders. At another reading, I met a 17-year-old girl named Taylor, T-E-I-G-H. She was sure to tell me. When I get it, one N, whose mom brought her to the reading. She sat near the front and her eyes were shining the whole time. I threw her a bad feminist tote bag and she held it tightly in her hands. She was the first in the signing line and she told me how she looked up to me. It was wholly adorable. My eyes burned at the corners because I was so moved. I kept thinking, may I be worthy of your admiration. At another reading, I met a young man named Robert who also brought his mother. She began speaking to me in Creole, so I responded. They were Haitian, and they were just so excited to meet another Haitian from the Midwest. The bookstore had sold out of my book, but they wanted to meet me anyway. They apologized as if they owed me anything at all. Their presence at my reading was all I could ever ask for. I gave them a copy of my book and signed it, and they asked if they could take a picture with me, and I kept thinking, may I be worthy of your respect, and may I be worthy of our people's history. It has been humbling to realize that when I use my voice, I am not just speaking for me. I am speaking for a great many people. There is an awesome power in that and one hell of a responsibility, and I try not to take it for granted. As podcasters or rising podcasters, you're all looking for the best ways to use your voice. You're looking for the strength and the courage that it requires to use that voice. You may not feel it yet, but you are going to find your way. As you do, there is one truth that you should not let go of. No one can narrate or examine this world that we live in the way that you can. And that is the power of your voice. If you bring the full force of yourself to what you have to say, your voice is going to be powerful beyond measure and how. And I look forward to hearing it. Thank you.